Tomorrow marks the 71st anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, the concentration camp where the Nazis murdered more than a million people. Just 40 miles from Krakow, Poland, Auschwitz is now a frequently visited Holocaust site. In 2015, nearly 2 million visitors toured this concentration camp-turned-museum, the largest number of visitors in a single year since the state-run Auschwitz-Birkenau Museum opened in 1947. Reporter Shira Springer and her parents, Felix and Helene Springer, spent a day at Auschwitz, which has a deep family connection. This is their story, and a warning, some of it may not be suitable for all listeners.
The road to Auschwitz winds past farmland, historic churches, and small country homes. Our driver, Erik Wies, knows the route well. For nearly two decades, he has taken visitors to the world's most infamous concentration camp. As we drive there, he offers us this advice. You're on vacation, he says. Try to relax.
I know that for you it will be a very unpleasant visit, and no one will promise that it will be easy, but try to little bit relax, or the bad emotions will burn you.
My parents and I know that Erik is right. We have twice postponed plans to visit Auschwitz, and there's a reason, a personal one. Both of my late paternal grandparents, Henry and Irene Springer, were imprisoned in Auschwitz during the Holocaust. And as Erik drives and talks about what to expect, it's hard to reconcile the past with the present. When we arrive, the parking lot is full of tour buses. We see school groups and families and backpackers and older couples all excitedly, nervously anticipating what lies beyond the museum doors. We walk through metal detectors, down an office-lined corridor, and back outside into the crisp morning air. And there it is, the entrance to Auschwitz. We stand and stare in silence at the cruelly deceptive words above the main gate, Arbeit macht frei. Work makes you free. After seeing the entrance to Auschwitz in countless photographs, it's smaller than we expect, roughly 16 feet across. But as my mother can attest, no less powerful.
I walked under that gate, Arbeit macht frei, took a deep breath, and thought, I am here. It's a place I never wanted to be, but I was walking under the gate and into some horror that I was going to see that affected people I loved, and many other people that I didn't know, and it was horrifying.
Once inside, I ask our guide, Łukasz Lipinski, is there any way to find out what happened to my grandparents here? He takes us to the archives. We enter a small, white room and see a vast expanse of file cabinets. My father fills out forms that ask for his parents' names, birth dates, hometowns, and occupations. He also writes down his father's tattoo number. 141555.
Yeah, which was the most significant thing they had because they could organize it. And I remember just, you know, not remembering my mother's for some reason. And I was so pleased to be able to remember my father, which I've carried with me all these years.
The archivist finds three documents connected to my grandfather. They show that he arrived at Auschwitz on August 26, 1943, and was sent on a death march to the Mauthausen concentration camp in late January 1945, days before the liberation of Auschwitz. Knowing the majority of prisoners survived at most a few months, we do the math quickly. My grandfather spent 17 months here.
I just found that, you know, extraordinary and remarkable in ways that spoke to me that I... candidly did not expect. When I saw that there were documents, it was the only time that I teared up.
We leave the archives and walk deeper into Auschwitz I. At its height, Auschwitz consisted of three main camps and covered more than 15 square miles. It was the largest concentration camp built by the Nazis. We head toward former prison blocks, and Łukasz tells us about the selection process and the gas chambers and the staggering number of people murdered each day, sometimes more than 5,000. We file past piles of suitcases and shoes and eyeglasses and hair left behind by men, women, and children sent to the gas chambers. Then, my father asks Łukasz how many people were found alive when Auschwitz was liberated.
7,000 alive.
Yeah.
But those were the ones who were left here basically to die. Weak and sick prisoners that could not take part in the evacuation, the death marches. So among the prisoners that were here, found by the Soviets, there were many people that were like skeletons.
In Block 27, we come to the Book of Names, a memorial to the Jews murdered during the Holocaust. It is 8,000-plus pages hanging from a black stand in the middle of an otherwise empty room. Each page is 3 feet long and contains hundreds of alphabetically listed names.
The immediate compulsion was to seek out names. And
everybody was doing it.
And, I don't know how many names. I know you went to a few family members' names, and I did too.
My found namesake.
Here's a family that I never knew, and kind of wondering who this person would have been, who this person was. And it was just really overwhelmingly sad.
Especially when we find the name of my grandfather's older brother, Shaul, and we see that he was murdered in Auschwitz. We knew he went to a labor camp in Poznan, Poland with my grandfather, and figured they were transferred together to Auschwitz. Now, we know he died here.
You can imagine how awful that was for my father.
We move on to the crematorium at Auschwitz I and see where camp workers loaded bodies into ovens.
The bodies were put on such iron trolleys that are over there. Yeah. They used to put two or even three bodies on one trolley. The members of the Sonderkommando that did this job.
From Auschwitz I, we drive 2 miles to Auschwitz II, a place often described as a death factory. More than 1 million people were murdered at Auschwitz, and most died here. We pass a train platform along the way. Łukasz tells us this is where the Nazi doctors decided who lived and who died.
This was the place in which, for the last time, they saw their families, their relatives. For me, one of the most important places in Auschwitz.
Auschwitz II, with its destroyed gas chambers, train tracks, brick chimneys, and empty foundations, appears less sanitized than Auschwitz I. Still, the thick grass all around seems out of place because of something my grandfather once told my dad.
I remember, ankle-deep mud. And when I say I remember, that's what I remember hearing about.
We learn from Łukasz that starved prisoners ate the grass and the ground turned to mud. 3 weeks after our visit, my parents and I receive an email from the Auschwitz archives. It contains copies of my grandfather's concentration camp records, including the form filled out when he arrived at Auschwitz. It's the first time we see the entire document.
Looking at those papers, it was extraordinary to me. That was my father's signature. Henry Springer now, Chaim Springer then, it was exactly the same as his signature. This was, him there signing this paper, documenting.
As a young man.
Yeah, as a young man. Well, young man of 31, 32. And so in some ways, seeing the paperwork said, oh my God, this really did happen, that he had gone through this.
We didn't find any documentation for my grandmother, but my father thinks she spent more time at Auschwitz than my grandfather. I asked my father if visiting Auschwitz gave him a new appreciation of his parents.
Absolutely, one, how strong they must have been physically, and then how strong they must have been mentally to have survived all of this. I had a new appreciation of how special they were, and I hadn't had that in that way.
There's a strange pride in how my grandparents went on after the Holocaust. They didn't know each other at Auschwitz. They met after the war and married in a displaced persons camp. They built a new life together. As my parents and I remember, they were kind, generous, optimistic, and loving. And given what my parents and I saw at Auschwitz, that is also extraordinary. For Here and Now, I'm Shira Springer.
And you're listening to Here and Now.